Are you a first responder? At Husqvarna, we support the uniformed men and women who serve our country and communities. As a way to honor your service, we created the Military and First Responder Appreciation Program. As a first responder, you qualify for a discount on your purchase of Husqvarna powered equipment. Get 10% off select commercial products at participating dealers. Whether you're starting a business or maintaining your property, you can count on Husqvarna. Find out why we're the brand that's trusted by real professionals. Visit Green's Dependable Hardware at 15220 A, Highway 43, Russellville, Alabama. You can also find them on Facebook at Green's Dependable Hardware. Give them a call at 256-331-0123.
If you like hickory-smoked ribs that fall apart at the slightest pull, or barbecue shoulders that are so slow-smoked each tender bite melts in your mouth, then you are going to love Baby Jack's Barbecue. Baby Jack's Barbecue in Bartlett and Arlington. Try the barbecue chicken, beef brisket sandwich, barbecue potato, it is huge, or the Baby Jack Trio, pork, turkey, or beef brisket sliders. You like wet ribs? They like dry ribs. Get one slab that has them both. Catering? Baby Jack's can feed a family or an army. Drive in, drive through, order online, or come in and set them in. Baby Jack's Barbecue in Bartlett at Highway 70 in Appling, or in Arlington at Highway 70, just a block west of 385.
Hello, my name is Christian Martinez. I'm a rising senior at Athens Bible School. My school is great because of the wonderful environment in which students can grow and flourish. We have great academics that include the university preparatory diploma and dual enrollment courses that lead to an associate's degree before high school graduation. All my teachers and the school's employees are Christians who are devoted to the welfare of students. We have an excellent student body, competitive sports program, and study the Bible first thing every day. It's a great place. Please consider joining us at ABS next year, or give that special child in your life the great opportunity I have.
Are you in Alabama and need questions answered by a medical professional? If so, my friends at Trinity Medical Care are proud to announce that they are offering telemedicine. With telemedicine, you can stay at home and still have your visit with the doctor. Telemedicine from Trinity Medical Care is now available Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Make your telemedicine appointment today by calling 256-489-3192. That number again, 256-489-3192. You can also follow Trinity Medical Care on Facebook.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Worley, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Hey, step up and make a difference like he does.
Hey y'all, this is Jeff Foxworthy, and you, yeah, you can make a huge difference in somebody's life. You just may not have figured out how yet, and that's why you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi, this is Maggie Peterson. I played Charlene Darling on The Andy Griffith Show, and you are listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi folks, this is Ricky Skaggs, and you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hello, I'm Gene Stallings, and this is The Mark White Show. Get off the sideline and get involved and make a difference in your community.
You are listening to The Mark White Show. My daddy is your host, Mark White. Something good
today. Welcome to another edition of The Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment. I am your host, Mark White. And right now, I have a very special guest on the line. Her grandfather, some of you recognize the name, Dwight Eisenhower, president and general. He was the 34th president of the United States of America. Welcome to The Mark White Show, Mary Eisenhower.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
I'm glad that you could come on the show today. And I know that there are many people who are excited to hear your voice. We just celebrated Sherwin Callender's 100th birthday on Saturday, and you had a very special message for him, and I know that he appreciated that, and many people who are connected still to World War II directly, they appreciate your grandfather and what he meant to them as they served our country.
The same day your birthday party was the 76th anniversary of D-Day.
Yes.
Which was very significant. So that was a great time for a 100th birthday party, too.
Absolutely.
Have a good time.
They had a big parade, a lot of cars involved, signs. He enjoyed himself. You can still get information from him and other veterans here in North Alabama. As you said, you once lived in the Huntsville area in Huntsville, and we have a group called Honored Legacies for Veterans, and some of those guys are close to 100 or over 100 years old.
That's amazing. It goes on to further illustrate the quote-unquote greatest generation, as Tom Brokaw called them.
And we have had a big risk to that generation lately with COVID-19, and we've tried to keep those gentlemen in their homes where they could stay safe and not get sick. And a couple have become sick, and we've seen across the country some of our World War II veterans pass away from complications due to COVID-19.
They survived the largest invasion in history, then COVID-19 gets them. However, there were several stories where there was one gentleman, I think, who was 102, and he was a World War II vet. He was landed on the beaches, and he said, quote unquote, that I survived World War II. I'm going to survive this. And he did. He actually recovered, which was kind of amazing.
It really is. That's remarkable. When we think about those days going back to when your grandfather served our country as a general and led our armies against Hitler, the fact that we were able to ultimately defeat Hitler and what he was trying to do, I try to recognize these veterans while I can and to get their stories that can be shared to not only my generation, but to my daughter's generation and the generation that will come after them.
I think that's extremely important because, as we know, a lot of people try to revise history. And if you have direct stories, there's no arguing with that. I think it's extremely important to continue to teach it. It's kind of, I understand that the curriculums in schools and things like that become crowded as history evolves, but I find it disappointing that this is so rarely covered because I think that there's a lesson to be learned from what happened during World War II.
Absolutely. And, of course, you came around a little later. But growing up with a grandfather who was such an iconic figure, he was still your granddad. There is a bubble that seems to be built around people who are recognized in that way. How were you able to see your grandfather and interact with your grandfather with so many demands on him and his service?
Well, that was the beauty of granddad. He adored his children and his family. And I often wondered, you know, a lot of people, particularly before the day of the travel became so normal, that were not so close to their grandparents. I wondered, you know, what the difference was. But when you think about it, a person with that kind of responsibility, who do they cleave to but their family? He grew up in a house full of boys. There were 7 boys total. 6 survived to adulthood. They lived in a very small, humble home, so they were very close quartered and that kind of thing. And my father ended up growing up as an only child because his brother died at 3.5 of scarlet fever. So granddad, I think, really missed kind of the chaos of a big family. And my father was oh too willing to help out. He had 4 of us. I'm glad he didn't stop at 3. because I'm the youngest. Anyway, I didn't realize he was anything but a knee-slapping grandfather until I got into school and people started treating me strangely. Very blessed that way.
Elaborate on strangely a little bit, Mary.
For example, I knew that he lived in a fancy house in Washington, but I didn't know he didn't own it. I thought he had a mortgage on it like everybody else, right? You know? when I was introduced to people, like in school and things like that, there was no mention of me when we were introduced, and people would say, well, how's your grandfather? And I'm like, well, fine. You know, what's the deal? Then finally, of course, things started falling into place, and I understood what was going on. The beauty of him was that he never crisscrossed. In other words, when he came home from, quote unquote, the office, there really wasn't any way to know it was the Oval Office because he didn't act that way. He was with the family. Then we did family things and we talked about family things, and I knew very little about how he actually felt about things until later on.
Thinking about the fact that your grandfather married Mamie Dowd, although you have the Eisenhower name and that's very strong, you do have another side to your family, and that's the Dowd family.
Right, right. It was kind of funny because my grandfather was born very humble, and my grandmother was born. You know, let me put it this way. Her father retired the day that he got married. They were fine for money and things like that. So when my grandmother met my grandfather, it was love at first sight. I mean, they met in late winter and they were engaged by Valentine's Day the next day and married the next July. And of course, back in Victorian times, my great grandmother, you know, kind of had a case of the vapors, and she said, "Oh, he's a military man. He'll never amount to anything," and all that stuff. Well, you know, I've often wondered if when she was in her bedroom at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, she still felt the same way. But they actually ended up quite close. He won her over because he was a charming man.
We're talking to Mary Eisenhower. She is the youngest granddaughter of Dwight and Mamie Eisenhower, our 34th president of the United States of America. And of course, we just now had the 76th anniversary of D-Day, and we are talking to Mary right now. I hope you'll stick with me as we continue to have this conversation. You are listening to The Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment, and I am your host, Mark White. Let's all do something good today. A little wink, a pat on the back, a big old hug, a little laugh. We can make a difference. All we have to do is try. Yeah, every day's a chance to change somebody else's life. Let's all do something good today.
Hi, I'm Crystal Gale, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. And one smile can make a difference. Na 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 na. Someone loves you, I do.
Hi, this is Maddie from Mama Nims.
And this is Amy. Come on out to Mama Nims and have some ribeye steaks, hamburger steaks, pond-raised catfish, whole fish or fillets, made from scratch, homemade, the best in the world ever, apple pies, fresh desserts.
Y'all come by and see us.
Thank you, Amy and Maddie. I would like to encourage you to go to Mama Nims in Anderson, Alabama, 256-800-4003. Check them out on Facebook at Mama Nims, M-A-M-A-N-E-M-S. Just like Mama's cooking, we put the love in it. Thompson Roofing and Construction is a locally owned family business serving the North Alabama and Southern Tennessee area. They are a Better Business Bureau A-plus member since 2011 and a GAF Master Elite Contractor. Give them a call at 256-952-3309 or check them out on the web at 256roofing.com. They offer free inspections.
Thompson Roofing and Construction.
It's bow time. Down here, pimento cheese is pretty much its own food group. So when fans told Bojangles to bring back our legendary spread, we did them one better. And also fired up a gooey, golden, melty, molten, pourable pimento sauce. So now you can spread it thick across your favorite biscuit, pour it over seasoned fries, stir it into mac and cheese, or dip Supremes in it. Because with four ways to eat our pimento cheese, the recommended daily servings just became yes. It's bow time.
Is it time for a haircut? Give my friend Philip Butler at Southwind Barbershop a call. Located in the Foodland Shopping Center at 16041 Highway 72 in Rogersville, Alabama. You can call him at 256-247-5658. Make an appointment or just walk in. That's Southwind Barbershop in Rogersville, Alabama. Located in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the Alabama Music Hall of Fame honors Alabama's music achievers. You can even go into the recording studio and try out your talents as a singer. That's the Alabama Music Hall of Fame, located at 617 Highway 72 West in Tuscumbia, Alabama. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Give them a call at 256-381-4417. Check them out on the web at alamhof.org.
You are my sunshine, only sunshine.
You Hi, I'm Kyla Carter, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Stay unique and find a way to make a difference that doesn't just impact you, but impacts others around you.
Love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
away. 'Cause there's a blue-eyed kid on second base. Wants dad to watch him play.
Welcome back to the Mark White Show. I am your host, Mark White, and we have been talking to Mary Eisenhower. She is the youngest granddaughter of the 34th President of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower, and the First Lady, Mamie Eisenhower. Welcome back to the Mark White Show, Mary.
Thank you. It's so great to be here, Mark.
I'm thrilled to have you, and I know that there are people who are listening right now that are tuning in because of the connection that you have to our former president. And it is a unique situation that you spoke of as a young person, at first not realizing what your grandfather did, and then to realize, okay, it's a little different and it's a different lifestyle, but it's still your grandfather. And it's still, as you said, your grandfather left the Oval Office and he was a granddad to you.
Right. It wasn't until later on that politics became a conversation anywhere near the house, which was wonderful. You know, he and my father were very close. A lot of people don't know this, but my father was a West Pointer, and he was the class that graduated on D-Day rather than have the usual leave that's given to graduates of a month before they have to go serve. Daddy was called right after graduation to the commandant's office. He was told what his father had just done. He did not know about Operation Overlord and that kind of thing. They put him on an airplane and sent him directly to England to be with my grandfather right after graduation, which was really kind of something, I'm sure, for him. But he ended up as aide, and he saw it, commiserated and advised, and, you know, just went through it all with granddad. Why were we so close as a family? I just think that when you're in a position where, you know, you've got the whole world in your hands, so to speak, you know, who do you trust? And the only ones you can fundamentally trust are your family.
One of the things I think about right now when I think about families and the connections that we have is that that is our root and that's our connection. How we develop our families in the home, what we do in our homes trickles outside of our home, and it influences people in our communities and across our society. And we have a choice to be a positive influence or be a negative influence. How we raise our children,
right.
How I raise my 6-year-old daughter, how I raise my 19-year-old nephew, will have a direct effect on other people as they continue to grow.
Not just a temporary one either. It's a forever effect. I wish so many people understood today. I really do. I was going to applaud you for that philosophy with your 6-year-old daughter. That's great.
I have a young lady who is now part of my show. Her name is Kyla Carter. She's an actress, and she's on Broadway, and she has done some things with Nickelodeon and DreamWorks, and she has Kyla's Corner. And her slogan is "Live life sunny side up." I told Kyla I was going to be talking. I told her that I was going to be talking to you today, and I asked her. I said, "Is there anything that you would like to say to Mary?" And first thing is hi, and the second thing is let her know that it is important to let young people know they can make a difference, and maybe she has some ideas how. Kyla was looking to see if you had some ideas for young people on how they could make a difference and the importance of young people as we move forward.
Well, of course, making a difference, you can do that as a whole in many ways. You can write a check and let somebody else do the groundwork, or you can volunteer, you can support things on your internet and that kind of thing. But I have found through my work with People to People International, I have found that the most effective way that kids today help, and they do starve to help, they really want to help, is hands-on. We have programs, and I've course been a part of them, where we'll take a group of students overseas or something, and we'll visit a children's home, and we might be painting a fence with the other kids, and we might be making sack lunches for less privileged children, we might be putting supply bags together, we might be doing all those hands-on things, but we're doing them also with the people who will benefit. And I've seen underprivileged children squeal with delight at the idea that they're able to help too. It's amazing, because it not only is the right thing to do, but it also builds international bridges. So when these kids grow up and somebody tells them that Americans are terrible, they'll say, oh, no, they're not. You know, because the magic that comes of these things, you make a difference not only physically, but you make a difference emotionally as well.
It's interesting that you bring up the international connections. On Saturday, I spoke to two 13-year-olds in the Netherlands, Kyla was part of the show as well, as she's made connections with young people all over the world because of her acting. And these two young men who were 13 years old were looking for ways to make a difference. And one of them brought up the fact that in Amsterdam, they have a huge homeless population. And I asked him, I said, have you looked up any organizations that might be working in the community there in Amsterdam to help that? And he said he had not. And so my suggestion to him was, if he found a passion behind trying to help people who are homeless, or he wanted to sing to his great-grandmother in the nursing home, make older people feel good by using his talent in the voice realm, he needed to start thinking about that.
That's excellent. We have chapters that involves community chapters and also student chapters. Rwanda has a community chapter, and one of our student chapters in the Midwest had learned that Africa in some places actually gets cold at night. It's hot during the day, but it gets cold at night, and that there were 4 million homeless children in Rwanda. These 15-year-olds all got together and quilted. It was more than 20. And sent it to the chapter in Rwanda to distribute so that the other kids could stay warm at night.
And those young people get the reward of knowing that they're doing something good. It does lead them down a path of continuing to make a difference as they get older. It's what we learn when we're younger is what we do when we're older.
Well, and everybody has fun. You know, the kids who got them had fun. The kids who made them had fun. So it turns negatives into positive. We used to have a program that we're planning to rejuvenate called Peace Camp. It was kids from all over the world, and we would meet in a kind of a safe place outside of the U.S. to discuss how current events are affecting their various cultures. I remember this one in particular in Egypt. One of the activities of the Peace Camp was to put supplies together. We had 30 countries represented, two students from each country. We wouldn't allow any two nationals to room together. In other words, they had to room with somebody from a different country. The language was English, but it wasn't their first language. So it was kind of interesting to see how all this went. But a couple of things happened. We had all these supplies available to them, and they were supposed to pack supplies for the less fortunate in Egypt. These kids come from all walks. It's a scholarship program, and they're not chosen by their income or ability to pay. They're chosen by their essays and what they want to do and what they want to get out of it and that kind of thing. We introduced them to the supplies and showed them a completed bag and, you know, what we had in mind. We thought that they would probably make about 500 bags or something in about 4 hours is what we allotted. I started to give them instructions on how to do this, and I started demonstrating. And they basically pushed me out of the way. They talked to each other and they organized. They made 1,500 supply bags in 2 hours.
Wow.
And I went, whoa, you know, hey, excuse me, I'll get out of the way. But, you know, you talk about different, you know, and there were kids from Siberia, from Vietnam, covered the world. And I just thought that was the most amazing thing in the world. And then another time when you go on the Nile, you're on a boat, right? And that's a good place for something like that, because you can't go anywhere in a boat. You have to talk. There's a pool on this particular boat. We were taking a break, and you know, I suggested, because it was hot, I suggested the pool. They thought that was a great idea, and they all went up, and I went up to check on them about, oh, I don't know, 30 minutes later, and there were only two kids in the pool, and the rest were, you know, they were sitting around, they were playing cards, and they were talking and cutting up and that kind of thing. And I said, don't you want to swim? It's really hot. They said, oh, yes, yes, we have a schedule worked out. And I was kind of, what? You know, and they said, yeah, well, it's against her religion to swim with boys. So we've timed it so that everybody has an equal amount of time in the pool, and we take turns.
Nice.
Now, they did that without any adult supervision. These are kids that are between 14 and 18.
Wow.
They just worked it out. You know, they didn't go screaming that, you know, we weren't sensitive or, you know, something like that. They just worked it out.
That is
learn a lot from them. Yeah. And to me, you know, that is helping. You know what I mean?
Yes.
There are all kinds of ways that you can help. You just, and that don't require a check and that require your heart. That's the greatest check you can write is your heart.
I love it. I love that. I want you to elaborate for listeners right now about People to People and give a voice to this organization and how people can be a part of People to People.
Oh, thank you. It's been my life's work since 1996. However, it was founded in 1956 by Dwight Eisenhower. He was concerned. I'd say that the concept was probably born when he discovered the death camps. He was just so horrified. And he said, you know, we've got to figure out a better way to to get peace than the massive war that we had. And he very much feared a World War III. You know, he was thinking about it for a long time. And even though it was founded in 1956, in 1954, he actually got together with Nikita Khrushchev, who was, you know, his greatest adversary at that point. And they struck up a deal to send 25 businessmen, the USSR at that point wasn't taking women, to Moscow to meet their counterparts. A couple of things happened with that meeting. First of all, the ice was broken, at least between the two sets of business people. It opened the pathway for many more to come, and he called that his citizen ambassador program. He strongly felt that if the everyday citizen would work on mutual projects, would get together and only get to know each other, understand each other, that eventually peace would become a condition of heart rather than a hard-learned lesson. So in 1956, on September 11th, he chartered the President's People-to-People program. And actually, we thought it was kind of prophetic for a long time that he founded it on September 11th, 56, but that's actually that was actually the 10th anniversary of my great-grandmother, his mother's death. He was really honoring her by picking that particular date, which is kind of interesting because she was very much a pacifist and peace lover. Long story short, in 1961, when he was leaving office, he said, if this does not belong to the people, it won't work. So the next year, my father and Joyce Hall of Hallmark Cards, my grandfather and a couple of other key players, Walt Disney, I think even Arnold Palmer was involved, General Bradley. It was really quite an effort, but it came into the private sector and has been operating as a 501c3 ever since. And we do everything from student exchange, which is a very large program, to done the humanitarian eradication of landmines. We've done the peace camps that I just mentioned. So there's really, you know, I think our youngest member is about 12. We've had them as young as 10. And our oldest is currently 92, but we've had them as old as 96. So there's a little bit of something for everybody. It's great because our mission is broad enough that we can, you know, it's inclusive. We can include everybody. It's difficult when you try to raise funds because people say, well, what exactly is it that you do? And you go, well, do you have 2 weeks? You know, we can tell you all about it, but we do so many different things in different areas because we try to be sympathetic or we try to find the projects that go under the radar that make a difference. What does people to people do? You know, and it's like, do you have a couple weeks? Because it's going to take me that long to tell you all about it if you want all the details. You know, it has an extremely rich history and it has a large success rate too. For example, and we try to go for projects that are kind of under the radar that are very much needed, that, you know, they don't get the, shall we say, publicity appeal that an awful lot of other ones do. For example, when the tsunami hit Sri Lanka in 2004, I realize I'm talking about a long time ago, but I've been with it for a while. We didn't try to find bottled water for them. We looked for ways to rebuild their school system because that was a permanent thing. We knew that there'd be water coming in from everywhere. And we wanted to do something that was going to last and sustain the community. We also had a program called Operation International Children. We teamed up with Laura Hillenbrand, the author, and the actor Gary Sinise. And we sent school supplies through the military to the children in Iraq and Afghanistan, or basically war, because there was Djibouti as well, but war-torn areas. And there were several things that happened with that. You know, of course, the local children, you know, would see they were at war, right? And they'd see these people walking around in fatigues and with guns and things like that. That's very scary for a little kid. But then when the soldiers actually delivering, I say soldier, when the military personnel are actually delivering things that will help them in school and their supplies, it gives them a chance to have a very positive interaction, then they understand that they're there to help. And it also advances education, which is the most important thing in the world, particularly in those areas. So again, you know, people are going to say, you know, Americans are terrible or whatever, and they're going to say, oh, no, they're not. They can make the argument, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely it does. And I would encourage people, if they're interested in finding out about the programs, all the different programs and how people can connect with people to people. And I wanted to make sure that we touched on that. And you've talked about students as well. And I don't know if you caught my message, but here in Athens, Alabama, not far from where you lived in Huntsville at one point, we have a school called Athens Bible School. And there's a gentleman named Ross Melvin, and he was a nephew to an aunt who married your grandfather's brother. Ross Melvin had all of these different documents and different things from Dwight Eisenhower and his own aunt and uncle, and he shared those things with Athens Bible School. So there's a whole section of the school dedicated to your grandfather. It's called the Eisenhower Room. I don't know if you saw that, but that's at Athens Bible School in Athens, Alabama. They think a lot of that Eisenhower Room, and it really is a remarkable thing to see here in one of our local schools where my daughter actually goes to school herself. And so I thought that was interesting, and I would make that connection. And then another thing that I mentioned to you was the fact that Adlai Stevenson, who ran against your grandfather in 1952, decided that John Sparkman would be his running mate. John was a first cousin, three times removed, and you had had dinner with his wife, and there is that family connection.
When I was living in Gettysburg, when you know, our property abutted with the grandparents' farm, there were two elementary schools. One had the Eisenhower Elementary School and the other one the Kieffer Elementary School, which was Stevenson's first running mate against Granddad. I was zoned for the Kieffer. I went to Kieffer Elementary School when there was an Eisenhower Elementary School, you know, right around the corner, which is kind of funny. There's another website that goes to the NGO side. Yeah, and that's cultural experiences. There are humanitarian projects on those, but it's mainly cultural. Our mission's three-pronged. It's humanitarian, cultural, and educational. All programs are going to have an element of each one of those things in it. But anyway, the website is www.ptpi.org.
PTPI.org.
Yes.
Just to be clear, people who want to find out more about people to people can go to ptpi.org. That's ptpi.org. Folks, we have been talking to Mary Eisenhower here on The Mark White Show today. Mary, thank you so much for joining me here on The Mark White Show and sharing about your grandfather, your family, the program People to People, and what people can do to try to make a difference in their communities, and also a special message to young people as they try to find ways to make a difference.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
You are always welcome. And now that we're connected, anytime you have anything that you would like to share, please feel free to contact me and let me know.
Oh, sounds great. Thank you so much.
That was Mary Eisenhower, the youngest granddaughter of President Dwight Eisenhower and First Lady Mamie Eisenhower, the 34th President of the United States. We appreciate Mary joining us here on The Mark White Show today. I hope you'll tune in next time as we continue to recognize difference makers in our communities and share their stories to encourage and inspire us all to make a difference. You have been listening to another edition of the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment, and I am your host, Mark White.
Hey, y'all, this is T. Graham Brown, and you're listening to my friend Mark White right here on the Mark White Show. Great guy. If you want to make a difference in your life, trust in God and never doubt, for surely He will see you out. Make a difference in somebody's life if you can only see me now.
Special kind of hero.